Blog Talk Radio.
Y'all ready to rock?
Good evening. It is so good to be back after a month-long, much-needed hiatus and celebrating our two-year anniversary with Injustice, the show that shares stories of injustice and allows listeners to ask questions and seek advice. Each month, we feature guests who are making a difference in the Black community and or impacted by the criminal justice system. I am author Melinda Robertson, your host and founder of Black Mothers for Justice, a 501c nonprofit that provides a safe space where mothers with children wrongfully or rightfully incarcerated can speak their truth without being judged. The mission is to educate mothers about systemic racism and an unfair and unjust criminal justice system to free them of the hurt, pain, shame, and guilt, and begin the healing process, because healthy mothers are key to building better communities. Black Women's Guide to How to Survive the Criminal Justice System, Part 2, is being released this summer. Part 1 consisted of stories of survival from 5 mothers impacted by the criminal justice system, while Part 2 breaks the process, beginning with arrests, warrants, plea deals, court hearings, grand juries, etc. And it explains in detail indictments, summons, Miranda rights, interrogations, arraignments, bail bonds, and public defenders in detail. Because we know that knowledge is power. The book will also include parent guidance chapters such as Be a Mother to Your Child, Not a Friend, The Impact Violent Video Games Has on Your Child, and You Can't Allow Everyone Access to Your Child. Motherhood doesn't come with a book, and young mothers don't know what to do, but when they know better, they will do better. If you would like to be a part of the Black Mothers for Justice movement, please visit www.blackmothersforjustice.com and or join our Facebook page, which is also the name Black Mothers for Justice, to join us as we rebuild the village that's desperately needed in our community. Tonight's featured guests, Rachel Usden and LaShawna Thompson from Peace for DC. Rachel became involved in the violence reduction space in 2016 as a volunteer with the DC Center of Moms Demand Action. Rachel learned that while D.C. has relatively strong gun safety laws, the city's borders are porous and illegal guns can easily enter the city. It wasn't until Rachel volunteered with Moms Demand Action that she realized she too was a survivor. Her uncle died by gun suicide before Rachel was born. Rachel recognized the ripple effects that tragedy had on her family was the same as the heartbreaking ripple effects that trauma has had on so many DC families who have had loved ones taken by gun violence, homicide, or suicide. After Rachel's home neighborhood, Tree of Life, Squirrel Hill, Pennsylvania, and the high school that her husband attended, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, Parkland, Florida, both experienced mass shootings in the same year. Rachel decided she wanted to do more. And in 2018, Rachel became the D.C. chapter leader for Mom Demand Action. By then, Rachel understood that much more beyond gun safety laws could make a community safe. Rachel works hard to show up and listen and get to know the amazing black and brown-led local community organizations during the arduous work of interrupting violence and healing trauma in D.C. Rachel is proud that as chapter leader, the D.C. chapter of Moms successfully advocated for D.C.'s first gun violence prevention director and effectively directed advocacy to increase government funding of gun violence reduction programs. She also led the chapter in supporting the passage of many of D.C.'s gun safety legislation. D.C. chapter's first Advocacy Day in 2019 and the Advocacy Week in 2021. LaShawna Thompson is the first Executive Director of Peaceful D.C., where she will work in collaboration with the district's gun violence prevention experts and oversee efforts to invest in proven solutions to prevent and interrupt violence that plagues our most vulnerable neighborhoods. In the recent past, LaShawna helped to oversee the district's Cure the Streets pilot program. Cure the Streets is a gun violence prevention program in distinct target areas that uses a public health approach to detect, interrupt, and treat violence. LaShawna is an experienced justice facilitator and a 2017 Just Leadership Fellow. In her role as co-chief of violence reduction, she works closely with the district violence interrupters and outreach workers to support them in their mission of preventing gun violence in D.C. In the past, she has worked with the D.C. Corrections Information Council inspecting prisons where D.C. residents are incarcerated. She was responsible for monitoring conditions of confinement. LaShawna has also worked with MORCA, which is the Mayor's Office of Returning Citizens Affairs, coordinating female reentry service. She is the executive director of the Women Involved in Reentry Efforts, a nonprofit organization she founded in 2013. That's abbreviation, which is The Wire. The Wire is a network of previously incarcerated women who have joined together to provide peer support and peer advocacy to women currently incarcerated and women returning from incarceration. LaShawna is a graduate of Trinity Washington University and holds a Bachelor of Arts degree in Human Relations. Please help me welcome the Women of the Hour, Ms. Rachel Dustin and LaShawna Thompson. Good evening, ladies, and welcome to the show. Rachel.
Good evening. How are you?
Thank you.
Great
How are
to be
you?
Here.
Thank you so much for joining us. LaShawna hasn't called in yet, so we're going to go ahead and start. And so let's do it. So, Rachel, at what did you know you wanted to make the nation's capital your home, and why?
I moved to D.C. I moved to D.C. in 1999. I started college at George Washington University that year, and I just fell in love with D.C. I love, like, the bustle of being in a bigger city. I love the warmer weather. I was in the college bubble for a little while. It took me a while to really get to know the real city, but the longer I was there, the more attached I grew to it.
Wow. I mean, and so you were here over 10 years, so yeah, you definitely really really came part of the family.
Yeah, it's incredible to think about how the city has changed in that time. And, it's a beautiful city. It's a really special city.
Oh, my gosh, but so much has changed. So much has changed since then to now. Obviously with the violence and stuff that we're seeing. And it's not just here, though. It's everywhere, Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, I I've been relatively fortunate in my life to not have been impacted by gun violence as badly as so many other people, particularly in D.C. We'll get into it more. My uncle did commit suicide by a gun before I was born, but just seeing the trauma that so many people live through with gun violence, in their daily lives in D.C. has really impacted me. And I didn't know that moving to the city. It took me, a while to see that and realize that and learn about it. But, that has impacted me greatly. And, I have great compassion and love for the people of D.C. And they deserve to be free of gun violence. That's why I'm doing this work.
Yes, and we appreciate it so much, all of your efforts, because it's so necessary now. So let's talk about Moms Demand Action and how you joined them and ultimately became the D.C. chapter's leader.
Yeah, I got involved in 2016. I just felt like I should start giving back and doing more. Honestly, like I should have gotten involved and done more sooner. And I was really impressed with how organized Moms Demand Action Group was, and the people running it were really nice. It's all volunteers. And I just started volunteering with them. And then after the two mass shootings that sort of impacted my family in 2018, I just decided I'd better do more and, get more involved. So I agreed to become chapter leader, which is a volunteer position, like almost a full-time volunteer position. It's a lot of work, but at the time I was told it was only a two-year position. So I said, okay, I can do that. It turned into 3 years, but it was worth it.
Yeah, so what exactly is the mission of Moms Demand Action?
So Moms Demand Action is all about common sense gun safety and just making sure doing the things that are shown by data to keep us all safe and, prevent gun violence. And we focus on the low-hanging fruit, the things that are supported by the vast majority of Americans, the things that will save the most lives. And, it's a national organization, and not every place looks the same. So on the national level, there's a lot of, basic gun safety laws that could really help save lives. And it's in the national news a lot. Universal background checks, extreme risk protection orders, which basically say, if someone is at risk of harming themselves or others imminently, then that law would take away their guns temporarily to prevent them from, hurting themselves or others. And other just basic common sense things. But, in D.C. we have relatively strong gun safety laws. And so that's not the issue in D.C. There's porous borders. People can just bring in illegal guns and sell them to people in D.C. So that's an issue. And, of course, getting to the root causes of why people would feel like they need a gun for safety or because everyone else in the neighborhood is carrying one, and why someone would feel the need to use a gun. We have to get to those issues. But going back to Moms Demand Action, they're focused on gun safety legislation, like what's in the national news right now. And at the local level, in different chapters across the country, we work to pass gun safety laws. And then we also work to support and amplify the work of the community organizations, the grassroots organizations that are doing things beyond just gun safety laws, things to prevent and interrupt violence, because there's so many amazing organizations doing that grassroots, hard, boots-on-the-ground work.
Yes, yes. I was reading earlier today about Shan Watts, who is the actual founder of Moms Demand Action, and how the Sandy Hook tragedy is what inspired her to start moms demand action. Have you ever, or, you know, I'm sure as a chapter leader at some point in time, you guys have meetings or whatever?
Yeah, I've met Shannon. I think she might be in D.C. this week. I know there's a huge push right now to try to get the Senate to take action. So there's a lot of Moms Demand Action volunteers in D.C. right now and other organizations, other national organizations working in D.C. right now and lobbying. And say the question again.
I was just saying that how she took Sandy Hook tragedy.
Right.
And I was just blown away the fact that there's a mom demand action in every state.
Yeah.
That's a big
movement. And you know, the mass shootings are a terrible thing, but
uh-huh.
every type of gun violence is terrible. And if you add up the shootings happening in D.C. and other cities every day, you know, they add up to mass shootings too. Like, if you look at the numbers, over 60% of gun violence is actually suicides, and then the next biggest chunk is homicides, and another large percentage is domestic violence incidents and unintentional shootings by children because there's unsecured guns in the household. So mass
mm-hmm.
shootings, the type that like Sandy Hook and the one in Texas and the ones that have been in the news recently, they're like a small percentage of the shootings, but they're terrifying and attract a lot of,
exactly.
of media attention. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But of course, you know, one life is too much, and each of these is tragic, and we need to get control of this situation.
Wow, I just was floored when you just said that suicide is the number one, like 60%. I had no idea.
Yeah, about two-thirds.
I thought
it was
homicide.
DC has a pretty low rate. Yeah, I mean, DC has, I think, the highest rate of homicides in the country
right.
compared to any other state per capita, and I think it's around number 10 for it compared to other cities. DC has a lower rate of suicides than in other places, but the rate of suicide has been going up across the country during the pandemic. Really, really sad, really tragic.
It really is. And so many innocent children are dying as a result of just finding guns in their homes. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I just can't fathom, you know, gun owners just being so lax with these guns in the home. You know, so many toddlers have been killed. Well, I was just reading today where a toddler, a two-year-old, shot his dad in the back. He found a gun, and the mom is being charged. Right, and the mom is being charged with manslaughter.
Oh, my gosh.
Right.
Yeah. Moms Demand Action has a one arm of the work called Be Smart for Kids, and it's all about how to promote safe storage of guns, how to make sure children don't get a hold of guns and, you know, cause unintentional shootings. So that's a big effort and help people get gun locks. They pass out gun locks for free at festivals and, you know, different community events. I've gotten into the habit when my kids go on a play date of asking the parents, hey, you know, my kids don't have allergies, you know, they know how to swim, all those typical kinds of questions, right? And then, oh, by the way, like, if you have any guns in the house, can you please make sure they're locked and unloaded? And it's kind of awkward at first, but I'm really
right. But
I feel better
that's
knowing.
The time that we're living in.
Yeah, and no one's ever gotten mad at me for asking. Everyone always says, you know, oh, thank you for asking, or oh, I never thought of that before. Like, you just have to make a habit of it.
Yes, and I can see why that would be a little odd at first, but it's so necessary. It's so necessary.
Yeah.
Today. These are the times
like
we're
you said,
living
it's
in.
The time we're living. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, Rachel, as chapter leader, the DC chapter, you guys successfully advocated for DC's first gun violence prevention director and effectively directed advocacy to increase government funding. So can you kind of elaborate on that?
Sure, yeah. So some of the strengthening of DC's gun laws that we helped advocate for were the extreme risk protection order, which I mentioned before, some additional regulations on things like bump stocks and extended magazines, and rules against ghost guns, which has become a big issue. We also advocated for DC's first director of gun violence prevention. We're thrilled, you know, Linda Harley Harper has that role now as serving as DC's first director. We also have really just been encouraging the city to come up with a plan, like a goal, a plan with goals. and let's get, you know, stay focused on that plan instead of, just going off in different directions. So the city hired the National Institute for Criminal Justice Reform, who did come up with a plan. And that was just recently released. I can send you the link to that. And so I think the city's next step is to, you know, implement that plan and make sure that all the things in that plan have funding. Yeah.
Oh,
and it's a really good framework.
I was going to ask you if you could share a little bit about the plan, some points of it, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, there's three, I'll back up a second. So there's three pieces to the plan that kind of help shape, like, what does this work look like? And it's prevention, intervention, transformation. And a lot of people don't realize that those are three different things. But basically prevention is more like working with children and working with youth who are involved in the justice system to help help them, you know, get the services and support that they need to prevent them from becoming shooters and to prevent them from going down that that path in life. So if that's the prevention piece. Intervention is like what we see violence interrupters doing, actually focusing on stopping shootings before they happen. So focusing on the highest risk individuals, the folks, you know, roughly like 20 to 35 years old who are really driving the majority of the violence. And the study that organization National Institute for Criminal Justice Reform did showed that it's really as few as 500 people driving as much as 70% of DC's gun violence. And so focusing efforts on those individuals, specifically like relentlessly engaging with them, because they're very hard to reach people. It's going to be hard to build trust with them. So you need credible people from the community to just be ongoing, relentless in trying to engage and build trust with these highest risk individuals and help them get resources, help them find a way out of this cycle of trauma and violence, because many of them are also victims, not just perpetrators. Give them, financial incentives to keep coming back and engaging with services and support, and help them transform their lives. And if you speak to some of the people who work as violence interrupters, a lot of them have gone through that life transformation themselves and turned their lives around. And that's why they care so passionately about doing this work and helping other people turn their lives around. Because we know the justice system doesn't always help people transform their lives, doesn't always give people the supports and services they need. We know holding people accountable is important, but that's not going to necessarily stop the violence. And the police don't always have evidence to arrest someone. And if we really want to break this cycle, we have to focus on those highest risk individuals and help them transform their lives. And then the third piece, prevention, intervention, transformation. The transformation piece is transforming communities, transforming neighborhoods. That's things like building parks and, you know, building better schools and making sure that every neighbor, you know, public housing is improved in every neighborhood, like all those big long-term kinds of projects. So that's the transformation, the neighborhood transformation piece. And so that strategic plan that NICJR developed, it's very focused on that intervention part, that middle part that I just spoke so much about, because that's what's going to help us bring down the homicide rate the fastest. That's the most focused, you know, intervention. And the other two pieces are also really important, but, you know, the city's already doing a lot of that stuff. The city put a lot of funding into DPR programming for this summer, and they've been working on clearing out vacant lots and all those types of additional things that are really good.
Wow, well, that's good to know. And this plan right here, I am so impressed. I'm so impressed. All of these make a huge difference. Intervention and transformation, that's key. That's
right.
Finally,
yeah.
Plan. And this plan, now yes, I am so impressed. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, yes, now we just got to make sure the city implements it and puts funding towards
right.
it.
Right, exactly, because it's not such as just drawing, it's not just so much as the funding. We have to actually do the work. And
right.
It is good to know that somebody has actually a plan that can definitely be effective in so many ways. I'm Washingtonian, and I've been here all my life, and I've never heard of a plan this concise. I am just so excited about the efforts because I think it's so important.
Yeah, I hope we can get everyone behind it.
Right, exactly. Because, and that transformation piece is really important, especially going into the community, because I think where I came, you know, I grew up in Southeast, and a lot of times, you know, you're surrounded by graffiti and dirt and, I mean, you know, trash and stuff like that. It would just be good to see some green grass or something like that. Something so small, but it can make a huge impact, especially for a child.
Yeah, give people
really,
hope.
Yes.
And positivity.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And just that make you feel better about where you live and where you come from.
Mm-hmm. I'll give a shameless plug. One of the other recommendations in the plan is a training program for violence interrupters, and that's what we just launched with our Peace Academy.
Right, exactly. That's the training program, and that's what the new PDC Academy is offering, right?
Yes.
That right there, I think it's definitely necessary, but I think it's going to change a lot of lives and, you know, for, you know, giving them this training and just this opportunity. I think this is amazing. So speaking of which, let's talk about the Academy. It opened last week. So, tell us a little more about the Peace for DC Academy and where it's located in.
Yeah, so Peace for DC started the DC Peace Academy in partnership with our co-founders, who are the organizations who have been doing the violence interruption work as contractors for the government agencies, the Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement, and the Attorney General's Cure the Streets program. So those organizations are, you know, doing the boots on the ground work, and their workers are these amazing, brave, selfless individuals who, you know, like I said, many of them have transformed their own lives, and now they are just giving back, working like incredibly long hours, building trust with these highest risk, hardest to reach people, trying to get them to put their guns down and turn, you know, break that cycle of trauma and violence and transform communities. And so we just wanted to be able to provide additional training on top of what the city is already providing for these brave workers. so that they can be as well equipped as possible to be able to do their job successfully. If we can pour into them with support and resources and give them the tools they need, then they will see better success rates. So it's a 13-week program. They meet 2 days a week. It's about 125 hours altogether. The instructors are all DC local experts who have been leading this work for years, some of them decades. And so it's really focused on like the personal and professional development of these peacemakers. And they're learning things like anger management, healthy masculinity, stop the bleed, cognitive behavioral therapy, public speaking and organizing and advocacy, conflict resolution, how to do mediation, restorative justice, how to work with law enforcement, and how to develop their own careers. And it's a really robust program, and they each got laptops to use during the program and take home with them. And we just launched last week, so we had our third day of classes today, and it's going really well. Everyone's excited.
Oh, that is so nice. So is this training program with or without pay?
So we have been providing the students with a stipend to help pay for transportation and childcare and also just, you know, help with, because they're giving us feedback. They're the first cohort of students. And so, you know, we want to make this program as successful as possible. And so they're giving us feedback on what's good and what could be improved. So we wanted to, you know, give them an honorarium for that. And we're also calling the instructors.
Oh, okay. Okay. So let's back up. So Peaceful DC, you are one of the founding, you were one of the you're the co-founder of Peaceful DC, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So can you tell the audience a little bit about Peaceful DC? I'm sorry, I should have asked it before we went into the academy, but I was so excited to announce the academy. Can we go into details about Peaceful DC and how it came about?
Yeah, no, I jumped ahead. I was excited too. We started Peaceful DC last summer, and it came out of the Moms Demand Action work. That's how I met our founder, Roger Marmette. We like to say we wish we had never met because, you know, his son was shot and killed in D.C. in 2018, and that's what prompted him to get involved in Moms Demand Action. And we did a lot of advocacy work with Moms Demand Action. We continue to do that. But we wanted to just go beyond just advocacy, and we wanted to be able to just bring more more focus and investment to all of the community-based violence intervention programs happening in D.C. because there's so much great work happening, but a lot of people are working in their own silos. A lot of people, like, you know, with the training program, don't necessarily have all of the resources and tools and support that they need. And so we wanted to just help, you know, we're really trying to get more funding to invest and build up this program because, you know, the violence intervention workers and organizations or community organizations doing that work, they are like the backbone of an alternative system of public safety, public health and safety. And we just want to build up that system because the city needs it, and the city will be safer with a stronger foundation for that program.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is so necessary. I commend you guys for just starting Peaceful DC. And the work that you guys are doing is so amazing. I'm just so in awe of the new academy and the work that you guys are doing. I think LaShawna has joined us. LaShawna?
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, how are you?
I am well. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, sure. Yes. So Rachel and I have gotten into great discussion about the efforts and what you guys are doing with Peace for D.C. I just want to take a moment and remind the listeners that you can press 1 at any time during the conversation and to speak with Rachel or now Lashana. Well, if you have any questions, please feel free to press 1 and join the conversation. So, Lashana, let me bring you in. We're going to try to get you caught up here. So I read your bio as we started the show. So let's just pick up here with the with you being the co-chief of violence reduction, working closely with the district's violence interrupters and outreach workers. What do you think the solution to gun violence?
Wow. Thank you for that question. And I think most people would agree that that's a very complex question, and so it's not a simple answer because it's going to a multitude of things, and it's going to take an all-hands-on-deck approach. So one of the things I think that is definitely needed is a trauma treatment because, unfortunately, what we're seeing now is basically a cycle of violence. And we're dealing with the generational impact of violence and a culture of violence that, you know, I think it's safe to say all across the country that has been socially acceptable to use guns to solve conflict or to deal with challenges. And so it's going to take an investment forming communities. It's going to take an investment in social justice. It's going to take for us to deal with poverty and, as I said, mental health. And it's going to require a different response. Public safety response alone won't get it. We need to take a public health approach, and we need to include those who are closest to the problem, the individuals who live in communities that have been plagued by gun violence, and invest in them and put them in a position to actually help us to deal with this problem. And a huge part of it is just teaching. Some of it is kind of simple in terms of teaching people new ways of being and different ways of dealing with conflict because we know we can never get rid of conflict, right? Conflict is a part of life. So helping people understand that there are different tools that you can use to resolve conflict and to deal with mental health challenges, I think that's what it's going to take. But like I said, it's going to take a larger investment in transforming communities and dealing with chronic poverty and state violence and over-policing and inadequate schools and health care and even, like, the food deserts. So it's not, like, just one thing that needs to happen. I think it's a multitude of things that need to happen. And they all need I was just saying they all need to happen simultaneously. Like, we can't just do one
right.
Try to work on one part of this problem and not work on every piece of it.
Right, I agree. And Rachel shared with us earlier about the prevention, intervention, and transformation that's being addressed in the through the training program. Rachel, am I right about that?
That's part of the strategic plan. But I just
love
the way Lashana said that, answered that. She said it all so well.
Yes. I agree wholeheartedly. It's no one answer. It's a multitude of things to actually get a handle on the violence that we are seeing nationwide today. So, Lashana, you were also a part of the DC's Cure the Streets pilot program, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
In 2000.
Yes. Yeah, so can you tell the listeners about the CURE program?
Yes, ma'am.
CURE the Streets,
Mm-hmm. Cure the Streets. In 2018, Attorney General Carl Racine launched a pilot program to bring Cure Violence Global here to D.C. And Cure Violence Global is basically an international program that was started by a medical doctor. His name is Gary Flutkin. And his theory is basically that violence is a disease and we should treat it in the same way that we treat any other disease. We should try to detect the disease and prevent it from spreading. We should change the norms related to the disease, and we should treat those at highest risk with the disease. And one of the great examples for me is just like with HIV, right? We didn't cure HIV, but we definitely created a situation where people can live longer with HIV, and there's a less likely spreading HIV. If we could get people to adhere to taking their medication, we could, first of all, treat people like that they have a disease or a sickness or illness, but not that they are a sickness or disease or illness. You remember early on, people didn't want to share silverware with people who had HIV positive, who were HIV positive, who were really, really ignorant, for lack of a better word.
Right.
And so we had to start talking about condoms in church. We had to start doing things like needle exchange. And that is how we to bring down the numbers in the black community specifically. And another one is like cigarette smoking. Like, I'm almost 50, so I can remember a time when we smoked everywhere. We smoked in airports. We smoked in, in restaurants, smoked in hospitals. And now if you see a person walking down the street with a cigarette, it's like not okay. And so we had to change the norms around cigarette smoke, and we had cigarette smoking, and we had to help people to understand why it's harmful and the harm that it's causing, not just to themselves, but to others. And so that's what the Cure Global program is all about, hiring people who live in the communities that have been plagued by gun violence, who have, some of them have transformed their lives and given them the tools and the resources that they need to go back into those communities and help other people transform their thinking and change that culture of violence. And you hire a team of outreach workers and violence interrupters, and they basically go out to the community and mediate conflicts. And whenever there's a shooting, they speak out and inform the community that shootings are not acceptable, that shootings are not normal. And they work with high-risk individuals and try to move them from high-risk to low-risk, working with them with whatever it is that they want to work on, right? Because it's not cookie cutter. Not everybody has the same problems, the same stress that is causing them to react violently. There's different things that, you know, some people need a job. Some people need better relationships with family. Some people need proper food, proper health care, as I said earlier. And so the Cure Violence Global program was replicated here in D.C. Cure the Streets. It started with two programs. They expanded to six programs. And by the end of this year, they'll have 10 programs in 10 different neighborhoods throughout the city. And what I like about that program is that it's a targeted program. It works in small geographic locations, and you work with groups that are in conflict with one another. So you don't just hire from group A. You hire A and group B, people to have relationships with those individuals that are engaged in the conflict that is causing the gun violence in the neighborhood. And I think it's a great program. It's data-driven. It's a they track the work that they're doing every day, and it comes with a training component where individuals are trained. The only thing about it is, like, there's nothing there's no train-the-trainers component to it. And, like, what Rachel was talking about with the Peace Academy, it's just, like, teaching you the basics on how to go out and do your job in terms of detecting conflicts and mediating conflicts and working with high-risk individuals and changing norms. But we wanted to be able to provide the deeper training so that the staff have more skills, like how to administer cognitive behavior therapy, healthy masculinity, public speaking and organizing, anger management. On last week, they was dealing with developing the whole person. This week, they was dealing with, you know, mental health is just as important as physical health, because a lot of these individuals we're talking about, these violence interrupters, they deal with a lot of vicarious trauma, and then they have their personal trauma. And so we want to make sure that they're taking care of themselves so that we're not causing more harm than good. So it's all about training, treating trauma, and transforming communities. And I think the CURE model is one piece of this.
but we have to be able to do deeper work, and we need to be able to do more. Like, we shouldn't treat it like an experiment, in my opinion. We should put programs like these in every neighborhood that needs them.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I really like the analogy of cure, you know, treating it as if it's a disease. That's powerful. That's powerful. I'm speechless. I just commend you ladies for the work that you all are doing, because it's so necessary. Guns give these individuals a false sense of security, and I don't think they really understand the impact of taking someone's life. I just don't think that they really grasp that.
And you know, I appreciate that, because I've been on the other side of this issue, having grew up in a community that was plagued by trauma and violence. And I was convicted of a violent crime where I used a gun to take someone's mm-hmm. life. And mm-hmm. a lot of times I talk about it, I say exactly what you just said. I didn't understand what I was doing. I didn't understand the finality of death, first of all, because people was dying all around me. It was becoming mm-hmm. the norm. And I didn't, even though it's like, if you had a gun and you used it, of course you meant to kill somebody. No. Like, when you're a young person, you're not really able to connect the dots around like,
right.
the choices you make and the consequences that will come as a result of those choices. So I can appreciate
right.
you saying it, because very rarely do I feel like people really get it and people really
mm-hmm.
understand, like, yes, that's a young person and they're doing some very dangerous things, but they don't really understand what they're doing, and they're not looking for the outcome that they're getting. The goal is not to go
right.
out and take somebody. The goal is to
right.
feel empowered at the moment. Or maybe
at the moment.
At the moment, right? But you're not thinking that, oh, my God, like, I could do something that could actually cost somebody their life. They could be gone forever, and it could cost me my life as well. Those young people, I think it's safe to say nobody between the ages of probably 18 to 34 that we're thinking of is thinking like that when they're dealing with the level of trauma, their lack of impulse control, their paranoia, their inability to make healthy choices and even think right. Like, trauma basically destroys your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so all
right.
of that is what's causing those behaviors where we on the outside looking in and we're like, don't they know what they're doing? They need to just stop. It's like, no, they don't know what they're doing. So thank you for
right.
that.
Right. I don't think they know. I just really don't think that they know. They really, but hurt people.
Right.
And, no, I just don't think they think that they are aware of the ramifications that comes with, you know, with you know, killing someone or, you know, just having a gun available to them. Wow. So what do you ladies, I know we've talked about the solutions. We're getting short on time. Like, you know, I already asked, there's no one with no particular solution that's going to solve the gun violence that we are witnessing. But I would like to ask each of you, in your opinion, what do you attribute the increase that we are seeing? I mean, because babies are being killed at an alarming rate. This is nationwide. We are in crisis right now. I believe that the pandemic had a lot to do with that, being isolated and on lockdown. But that's my opinion. So you guys are the professionals. So I'd like to know, Rachel, start with you. What do you think?
Well, I agree. I think the pandemic certainly had a role in the uptick, the you know, proliferation of guns is also a major factor. So many people are stressed out and traumatized and feel hopeless, and more people are feeling, you know, unstable in terms of their housing and their jobs and so many different things. So I think, you know, it's not a simple question. There's definitely more than one thing that has impacted this. and having schools closed, having community centers closed, all those things during the pandemic had an impact. I wanted to lift up and give a little bit more detail on one of the things that we're going to be teaching at the Peace Academy that I think could really make an impact and be expanded to help more people deal with trauma in the city, and that's cognitive behavioral therapy. We're bringing in a program that helps teach cognitive behavioral therapy for the field, helps make it accessible for anyone. And, you know, this is a special type of therapy. Usually you have to go to a clinical therapist who can teach you how to practice cognitive behavioral therapy or CBT. But we found this program called ROCA that teaches it for the field, teaches it specifically for violence intervention. And they've broken the whole practice down into 7 simple flashcards. And that helps intervention workers use it on themselves and use it with their clients. And it really just helps people like slow down their thinking and reactions and helps them think through how they are reacting to trauma and stress and conflict and slow it down and decide, like, is this really, you know, the action I want to take rather than, acting impulsively, which a lot of people do when they're so stressed out and traumatized, the way we all are right now. And so I'm really excited for the students to learn that and to just help more people in D.C. Learn that practice and build it into all of our trauma support systems.
Okay. Sounds great. Definitely sounds like something we need. Donna?
Yeah, this question is always hard for me because, like I said, I grew up in the early 90s, I became incarcerated, so I grew up in the late 80s. And I've studied history pretty extensively. And so this is not a new thing to me from where I sit. Like, America is just a very violent country. And killing Black people or creating conditions for Black people to become extinct is like the American way. And so for me, it's all about, I guess, like coming to grips with like who we really are. And then, like, making a commitment to turn the corner together as a nation, like, toward healing and reconciliation. Because, like I said, none of this is new to me. It feels the same. Mm-hmm. It looks the same. It hurts the same. And it's not getting better. We just, like, it's like the greater and the present swallow up the lesser in the past. Like, we talk about talking about what's happening right now. And I had this conversation with my grandson because he's talking about the school shootings. He's 17, and he's talking about how devastating it is to think that you could be in school and that someone could come in and shoot you. And I was like, you do know, like, they've been lynching Black men since the 1900s, 1800s, right? And he's looking at me like, I don't care about that. I mean, he didn't say that, but that was the look on his eyes like, what that got to do with me? That was in 1800s. Mm-hmm. Like, they've been lynching Black men and killing Black babies forever in this country. And so I think until we really, like, acknowledge what we're dealing with and really take a, like, admit what we're dealing with, it's difficult for us to make the changes that we really want to see. It's racism.
Right.
You know?
I've never witnessed anything like that. I'm 60. I've never seen anything like this. I mean, and I grew up in Southeast.
Yeah, my grandson's looking at me like, I don't want to hear nothing about no history. Like, lynching, what does that mean? It means nothing to him because all he knows is school shootings or community violence.
I grew up in the 70s. And in D.C., born and raised in South Carolina, but during that era, when I grew up, we had a village, and school was one of the safest places that you could be, and it's just heartbreaking to see the violence that we are seeing, and these babies are going to be traumatized. The ones that survived these mass shootings will be traumatized, I pray that they will be able to get the counseling, the extensive counseling that they're going to need. Because kids that were that weren't being, you know, may have been in an abusive home or may have been being neglected at home or whatever, the school was that safe place. They could go. They knew they would get a hot meal. They knew they would have, you know what I mean? And they're living in a different time. It's heartbreaking to see so many, you know, children's lives just being taken away. It's so senseless. We're winding down the time, ladies. Believe that the ghost guns, real quick, can you kind of, you know, sum it up with the impact that you think the these ghost guns are having in the epidemic that we're seeing today?
Yeah, they're having a huge impact. The number of ghost guns has increased exponentially. And for folks who don't know, a ghost gun is basically like a gun that is made by a 3D printer, or is pieces that are put together that there's one component missing, so it isn't technically a gun, but then you can sell it to someone and all they have to do is this one little thing, and then all of a sudden it's a fully functioning gun. So it's a way that manufacturers have gotten around the laws and been able to sell weapons. You know, even law enforcement is against ghost guns because they can't be detected all the time by metal detectors. It makes it much more dangerous for law enforcement to do their jobs. So, making ghost guns illegal is a no-brainer at the federal level.
I agree wholeheartedly. So we're going to have to end it there. Thank you guys so much for being on the show tonight. I really appreciate it. I commend you all for the work that you're doing with Peace with DC and all the different, Moms Demand Action, Cure the Streets. I mean, you guys are doing a phenomenal job, and I just want to commend you guys for it. Thank you so much for being on Injustice, and I look forward to seeing what you guys do in the near future. Take care, and good night.
Thank you so much. Shout out to The Wire, too.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. LaShawna, I wish you would have came on earlier because you have so much good information. I didn't get to really expound on about The Wire and different things like that. So I'll see you guys around soon. The work that Rachel and LaShawna are doing in the community with Peace with DC and the other various organizations they are a part of is making a huge impact, and is so necessary because far too many families have been impacted by gun violence. Our next show will be June 21st, 2022, and our featured guest will be Denise Jo Patterson, who is the founder of Parent Watch, an advocacy group that works with parents and their children involved in family services to ensure their rights are protected. If you have a story of injustice you would like to share or would like to recommend a topic for discussion, please DM Author Melinda Robertson across all social media platforms. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight, and we'll see you real soon. Take care, and God bless. Good night.
Thank you, Melinda. We appreciate you.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Take care. Bye. Don't be in the trial. At any traffic stop, we could be shot down.